Well, hello and welcome. This is your host of the Voices of Courage show, Kendi Foster. You know, the moment of truth has arrived for all of us. And quite frankly, we cannot stop looking at solutions to what's going on in this world. You know, there's still war, there's poverty, there's homelessness, there's pollution, there's environmental issues around the world. There's greed, there's hatred, there's prejudice, there's all kinds of stuff going on today. Have you ever asked yourself, why is this? Why is this continuing on at this point of time? I mean, this is a modern society. You know, we've populated the earth with over 8 billion people. Why is this still happening? Well, I want to answer some of those questions today with my guest. And we're going to take a little deep dive into, is it too late? Can we change? And if so, what must we embrace? What new ways of thinking? What new philosophies? How we treat each other? Do we have to change these things? Of course we do. But what is it? And what can you do? That's what this show is about today. I'm going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with my guest.
Are you ready to transform your life and get what you really want? Hi, this is Ken D. Foster, and over the past 30 years, I've helped thousands of people change the course of their lives by doing one special thing daily. This is the foundation of my latest book, The Courage to Change Everything. It is the ultimate guide to awakening the transformative power within you to get what you want. In this book, I'll teach you exactly how to unlock your hidden potential, break through your limitations, and get what you want, no matter what's happening in the economy or things beyond your control. So why wait? Get your copy of The Courage to Change Everything right now at couragetochange.us. That's couragetochange.us. There's no risk to you if you're not fully satisfied that this book has supported you in getting what you want, just to return it for a full refund.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Again, this is your host, Ken D. Foster. And today, my guest is Professor Mahi. Oh, I got that wrong. Nadine. Professor Nadine, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Doesn't matter whether you got my first name wrong. At least you did not get the person wrong.
I didn't get the person wrong. I got the right person here. And for those of you that do not know the professor, let me introduce Professor Nadine. He is the esteemed Ashbel Smith Professor Emeritus at University of Texas, Dallas. He is respected for his advances in anticipatory and dynamic systems, human-computer and human-technology interaction, and much more. He is the author of 30 books and over 200 scientific and philosophical articles. Professor Nadine is created with introducing concepts that open new fields of inquiry, seismic machine, the civilization of illiteracy, and anticipatory computing, and much more. His new book, Disrupt Science, The Future Matters, warns of the dangers of progress at any cost. Professor, I'm so happy to have you on this show. It's really time we talk about this progress at any cost. I'd like to get a little background on you for my audience before we dive into the book. I know you grew up in the Holocaust and you had a lot of suffering during that time. Can you tell us a little bit about your roots and what motivates you to be who you are today?
I was born in Romania, in one of the most beautiful places in the world, without any doubt. I was born, luckily, in a context in which I could pick up several languages, so to say, on the street, because the neighbors spoke Hungarian and others spoke German. And in addition to this, those who survived the Holocaust, some of those who survived the Holocaust, found refuge in that town, and they brought with them some other languages. To keep my story as short as possible, unfortunately, I lost 97% of my family in the Holocaust. That's why I'm very, very sensitive to any kind of form of violence. For me, any human life lost is one too much. And I say that without making any distinction between who is dying. Any human life lost is one too much that should not happen. But this applies not only to wars, it applies also to life. And from here starts my adventure in life, which means due to the limitations of a totalitarian regime, certain disciplines that I would have preferred to dedicate myself to were close to me. There was, under communism, very few people understand that, well, enough Jewish hatred, even after the war, when the slogan was never again, but never again became the hatred that was no longer official, but surreptitious. People were not allowed to do certain things. So to keep it short, I was able to be in the first group in Romania that studied computers. And for your listeners and for yourself, imagine that you finish a class in computer science and never had access to any computer. We haven't even seen a machine. So we were programming on paper. This gives me a little of an edge over all my colleagues in computer science, because there are subtleties in programming on paper and in debugging your program on paper that somebody who has all the computation under their fingers will probably never understand.
Well, you know, that's that brings me to a point. You know, there's just so much going on the planet. And, you know, now we're facing AI. AI is coming in, right? There's benefits to it. And, of course, there's risks to the AI. Let's just jump into that. What is your take on what's happening with the machines and the machine thinking and that piece right now? Should we be scared, or should we be embracing this new technology?
In general, my take on everything is to be optimistic and to look at the bright side. Therefore, anyone who starts by being scared gets from me only one invitation. Try to understand what it is. If you understand it, you will have enough reasons to be scared, but you will have also enough reasons to stimulate and adopt that the positive part of it. Being involved in AI from its early stages and having gone through the two so-called winters of AI, when the big promises of AI turned out to be at least exaggerated, I can assure you that the big discussion of today is very good that it's taking place. I am even against any form of controlling it, trying to submit it to some laws, but I'm also against everyone who is adept of exaggerating either the accomplishments or the so-called potential.
I get that. All right. Listen, you know, AI right now, and I know I'm using it, right? I use it for my shows. I use it to write and copy. I'm doing a lot of things, and eventually I'll be using it a lot more. So there's a lot of good that I see coming out of it. And what would you say some of the risks are with AI? From your point of view?
I'm rather curious as to what do we expect the answer to be? Because basically, there is no human being on the face of the earth who is not touched by AI today. Even those who live in Africa are touched by AI today, because AI is the newest form of computation in a world that is computationally fully integrated. I repeat, even those in a small village who knows where are touched by this new form of computation. On the other hand, when you keep hearing that AI is going to replace 100 million people. AI is going to replace your experts in medicine. AI is going to be the answer to creativity, and everybody will become talented from today till tomorrow. I say, wait a second. Take a nap, wake up after, you know, the time of the promise, and you will see how much of this promise is going to be accomplished.
That's good. Well, you know, let's talk about creativity. How does creativity define life from your point of view?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. It turns out that you and I are the immediate proof of what creativity is. We were created, which means we never existed before, in a form that is totally original. You and I are totally different, and so are the 8 billion people on the face of the earth. We were created, i.e., which means we were giving birth. There is a mother and a father, and there is an act of giving birth. That's creativity in pure form. It turns out that life is by necessity creative, which means life gives lives continuously. There is no life that comes from non-living. Life is generated from life, and not only that, it diversifies from life. That's the beauty of it. And you see it in your body, as I see it in my body, since the huge amount of cells in our body, the huge amount of cells that are our makeup, are all unique. Some of those cells are continuously refreshed, remade, recreated. This act of recreation is part of the dynamics of life. And this pertains from the monocell, in other words, from the living reduced to one cell, to the human being in various forms. But this creativity is really what distinguishes living matter from matter in general. We know the laws of physics, and we know how to describe to a great level of precision when is going to take place the next sun eclipse. We know that everybody will run into Texas and the other states to see the eclipse. We have no idea how your cells are going to behave. We have no idea at this moment which of those cells will prove to be cancerous. And you have no idea whether the surrounding cells, which are not cancerous, are able or not to keep in check the cancerous cells. Do you see how creativity means actually the expression of life?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that brings up a lot of questions, actually, around life itself. You know, we're in an age where the vaccines are going to save us all. The machines are going to save us all. The next great technology, AI, is going to save us all. But, you know, it's been proven time and time again that technologies aren't they can enhance life, which is awesome. But it doesn't mean that we're going to save ourselves. I mean, there's pollution, there's environmental issues, there's separation between races, between creeds. There's a lot going on here in this world. I got to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like you to just shed some light on your thoughts about how do we finally come together, or do we? I don't know. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kim D. Foster. I'm talking here with Professor Nadine, and we're talking about quite a few subjects, but we're really talking about the future of humanity and where we go as a species, how we step into either a new way of consciousness, a new way of thinking, or we go down the path that we're going down right now. So I'll let you answer that question I asked right before the break.
How do we get together? This is, how should I say, a task of a scale which I can only, you know, lift my hands and say, you got me. I don't know the secret of how do we get together, but I know a couple of things that relate to how do we get together. And they relate to it because if we look at what is at this moment putting us in a situation of genetic conflict, continuous conflict, in which we trust less and less each other, in which the individuals are no longer pursuing their goals as they pertain also to the survival of the community to which they belong. Coming together is no longer only a matter of political slogans or political ideals or social programs. Coming together is a matter of how do we make sure that in protecting our own future, we protect the future of everyone? If we consider the future only as an expression of what I need to have it better, what I wish to have, regardless of what the others have or don't have, then we don't have a future together. In other words, a sense of belonging. We lost in time due to the enormous advantage of science and technology, and I'm very respectful of those acknowledgments. We lost a sense of belonging. Why? Because when we had less of these means that allow us the prosperity that we have, we depended upon each other. In our days, we depend less and less upon each other. And this is reflected in the victory of egotism. This is reflected in the victory of lots of vanity. This is reflected in the fact that we reach the moment, which I defined in another of my book. We define the level in which the first thing we hear from some people is, I don't care. If you ever hear this sentence from somebody, you know that you have in front of you a person who is not interested in the future that we all will share if we are going to survive.
Well, if we're going to survive, and that's actually a question today, you know, it's been a question for a while, but, you know, from my point of view, we've got these technologies that, you know, I just think of the technologies in the military right now. And, you know, and I look at the images coming back from Ukraine and I watch the documentaries and I look at that and I feel my heart just goes out to the women and the children. I look what's going on in Palestine and Israel right now. And I just look at the moms from both sides. It doesn't matter who's being bombed. It's like, why is this happening today? Why can't we seem to get that concept that you said? The belonging concept. We all belong together. Everybody has a right to be on this planet. And, you know, I hear with the egotism of I'm right, you're wrong. You know, I got to protect myself and my country. And these are very, I believe, antiquated concepts that need to be really looked at. I think the concept of oneness, the concept of coming together and in that oneness needs to be addressed. Anyway, there's not a question in that. It's just my statement. Where do we go next with all of this? In your experience with all everything you've researched, how do we change that pattern, Professor?
We are faced now with a major decision whether we will continue on the deterministic path that we're following since Descartes 200 plus years, and which brought us to, as I mentioned already, an amazing level of prosperity, or we finally break us loose from the captivity to determinism in which the past determines the present and the future, and we realize there is a possible future that has to guide all our actions. And this is where my science of anticipation comes into place, in the sense that I'm arguing for the need to change the dominant model of science from a deterministic reductionist view to an anticipatory view, which now I want to translate it into the two examples you gave. I claim in the book that neither the war in the Ukraine nor the tragic, absolutely tragic events in the Middle East should have happened. We had everything that we need in order to have prevented them. That's why my book starts with this pretty clear statement that reaction to breakdowns are by many orders of magnitude more costly and usually ineffective than prevention, anticipatory action. We could have prevented these two wars. We could have prevented, and we continue to be in this situation, many other disasters. We could have prevented COVID. We had everything in place to prevent COVID. I claim it in the book, and I bring the data that shows why this is the case.
Why didn't we prevent it? If we have the technology or we have the understanding how to do this, why are we not preventing these things?
Because we are using deterministic technology, which means a technology in which everything depends upon what is called data. Data means we're measuring everything. That's fine, and that's dandy. It's good that we have the means to measure. It turns out that the more data we produce, that data is not intrinsically going to inform us about the future, because that data reflects the past, and we make statistical inferences from the past to the present to the future. We need to look into the possible future, which means I need to go from data to meaning. It turns out that the living is operating not on huge amounts of data, on minimal amounts of data, absolutely minimal, but meaningful. We have to turn from the obsession with blind data to meaningful data, to significance. When you go to the doctor today, and you means almost every patient in these so-called advanced Western countries, the first thing that you are subject to before the doctor will even see you is measurement. Let's take blood, let's take this, go on the scale, we're measuring oxygen. All those measurements are totally useless. They are dictated by regulations. All those measurements do not do what a good doctor will do, looking at you and having the perception of your whole system. I'm arguing that while we are very good in reductionist approaches, let's look at the chemicals that make up the body. We're very bad. We're not even close to a holistic understanding of the body.
So what we're talking here is really a holistic approach to life. Instead of just looking at numbers, we're looking at the whole system. We're looking at everything that is involved. Is that what you're saying here?
I'm saying indeed that we need to look to have the whole picture, but we also need to change the focus from obsession with data to understanding of the meaning of data. If we gain this understanding, then we're going to free ourselves from being, as we are today, captive to machines. Think about the fact that during COVID, there is one type of machine that worked day and night, the machine that did the sequencing of the virus. In other words, cutting it into pieces to see exactly what it was made of. Guess what? It's in the end irrelevant. They sequenced and sequenced and sequenced, but they never asked those specialists, epidemiologists, were never in the position to answer the question, okay, what is happening at the meeting between the virus and the human cell? They kept saying, okay, we're going to create a vaccine that more or less will imitate the virus. Then we inject that vaccine. It is now in your body. And the body will start multiplying that so-called fake virus represented by the vaccine. And you are okay. First of all, the vaccine was never a vaccine because it never prevented any infection. It does not deserve the name of vaccine. It deserves the name of a very intelligent therapeutic means. That it did therapy, but did not prevention. What is the advantage? What is the disadvantage? The advantage is that those who got infected did not die in the same proportion in which people who did not get the vaccine died. So we reduced mortality. That's a fact that cannot be disputed by anyone in the world. But given the fact that we did not understand really what is happening, the vaccine in some cases also killed. There is a big number that has to be associated with the vaccine of the people who were killed. And there is a way larger number of people who, due to the vaccination, ended up with a variety of conditions that affect their heart, their brain, that are represented by long COVID. So the price we pay for this deterministic view, we have all the numbers that describe things, but we don't understand the meaning of that data, is a price that is reflected in the number of people dead or in the number of people affected for the rest of their life. This is a short example that I presented in the book and on which I continue to work because, hey, the whole scientific community was a little surprised that this virus starts with so many variants. And those who have no understanding of what a virus is, like those who have no understanding what artificial intelligence is, so that's the price of ignorance, So those who do not understand the nature of the processes do not realize that when the cell, the so-called vaccinated cell, starts reproducing something, it does not do the reproduction like a machine. Since no two cells in our body are the same, depends upon which cells were really affected by the vaccination. And we ended up having the human body that was inoculated producing the variants. That is my current research. And I have really the proof of the fact that we ended up with a large number of variations because we are so different. That's no surprise, but you need to understand the process.
Well, that's there's a lot going on there. And when we come back, I got to take a quick break. I'm going to take a little deeper dive into what you just shared. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. If you just joined us, I'm speaking with Professor Nadine. He's the esteemed Professor Emeritus at University of Texas, Dallas. And we're talking about meaning. We're talking about machines. We're talking about you and how you can really arm yourself with the understanding of this world that we live in. And, you know, when somebody comes at you and says, this is the way it is, it's really a good time to start questioning everything. Professor, I want to ask you about the meaning piece of this, okay? So, what you described was in my little simple mind was a lot of people using a lot of data to basically, in this case, putting vaccines in people's body that we didn't really know the outcomes. And we were hoping we knew the outcome. We were hoping to prevent death. But in this case, some people were protected and some people weren't. So it kind of tells me that we didn't really know what we were doing, right? So go back to that meaning piece. If we had meaning involved here, how would the outcome have been different?
In order to explain the difference between data and information, let me give a simple example that everyone can understand. If you happen to be asked by your doctor, what's your blood pressure? And they put the cuff on and you get a number that is expected to be between 120 and 80, which means the higher is the systolic and the lower is the diastolic pressure. Okay? If you take that cuff and you measure your blood pressure after you went running, you are going to get a different number that is no longer your 120 considered to be, you know, the gold standard for not having problems with your blood pressure. You get a way higher pressure. If you are past, let's say, a sexual activity, you're going to see the your systolic going through the roof because that's the nature of the activity in which you're involved. Now, if you take the numbers as such, and you look at them, wow, look at this. Look at the meaning. In other words, make the relation between the data and the context in which the data was acquired. Now let's go to COVID. The same thing applies. Yes, we could have taken the path of vaccination using the traditional ways of vaccination, in which you take an inactivated virus and you create a vaccine, the classic way. Some countries did exactly that. India, for instance, did not have enough money to buy the mRNA vaccine and got vaccinated through other means. Interestingly enough, that vaccine is also a product of a scientist who lives and works in the United States, but did not have the level of support that Moderna had in the United States. What's the difference between India and the United States? I'm not saying that the traditional vaccine worked better than the synthetic vaccine. What I'm saying is it did not create the variants. It did not lead to a situation in which we start being captive to what we thought is the cure to the problem that we tried to solve.
Okay, I understand. Thank you for that clarification. So, you know, I wanna kind of talk a little bit more about your book. And, you know, first of all, you've written this book. It came out in just last year, 2023. So it's brand new, really. And I'm going to put it up on the screen. It's called Disrupt Science, The Future Matters. And I love that title. Why did you write this book?
I wrote the book because I'm convinced after looking at the whole evidence related to the events through which we went in the last 30 to 40 years, we are causing not only our happiness, but also our own tragedies. And I asked the question, okay, it's wonderful to take the happiness and you close your eyes and you say, I don't care how, if it's happiness, it's happiness. But open your eyes on the tragedies that we're causing to ourselves. And one of the tragedy is we started to undermine our own future. An ant that goes around to find means to survive. This is part of survival. The metabolism of the ant is such that the ant will not go out and consume more energy than what it needs to survive, because otherwise it will get into a situation such as the one in which we are. We are captive to the crisis of obesity that is then translated into a number of diseases. But the ant will not undermine the survival of the other ants. They need to cooperate, otherwise the whole community is endangered. Now, let's go from the ant to the bee, to the birds, you name it, and you realize that we as humanity arrived at a moment in which whatever we want to achieve. We consume an amount of energy way higher than the outcome that it affords. That is a terrible outcome. I don't mind that the so-called AI, which I repeat is brute force computation, has no intelligence, period. I don't mind that the AI is spectacular in playing chess with a world champion. But I mind a lot if the program that does that consumes more energy than a settlement of 400 to 600 homes. That is something wrong. Why? Because the world champion, when he sits down and plays a game of chess, will not consume more than 5,000 calories. And we are consuming the amount of energy by 400 households in order to win a game of chess. Something in this equation does not justify the effort. I'm not saying let's not try to understand what chess is, but we knew from Shannon long ago, a distinguished scientist of this country, the man who really can be credited for many accomplishments of what we call today AI. Shannon calculated that the game of chess is a mathematical problem. You can solve this mathematical problem by playing all the possible games. And it is 10 to the power of 120. Huge number, huge number. Do you really need to play the game in order to prove that you understand that it is a mathematical game? No, you don't. But we do it in order to then come with a claim. I go from the chess now to protein folding, that we can do protein folding. And we talk about the general intelligence. There is no such thing as general intelligence. The tennis player is in a situation in which the intelligence involved in playing tennis is different from the intelligence involved in cooking a good dinner. It's different from the intelligence of the poet or of the dancer.
I get it.
Why do we even aspire to the so-called general intelligence when all what it takes is to start understanding that intelligence is intelligence with a purpose? It is not intelligence in general. It is purposeful. Guess what? Non-living matter does not know what purpose is. The solar system is not driven by purpose. You and I, in our discussion, are driven by purpose. You want to reach millions of people. And I want to share with your millions of people ideas. I want to stimulate them to the extent of saying, boy, I need to change my way of thinking. Instead of going to the doctor because I have a headache, I will start by asking myself, what is it in my holistic behavior? Having a conflict with my wife, being dissatisfied with my dog, eating the wrong thing. That affects me. I take it in my hands and I'm willing to invest the time that it takes for healing. Instead of swallowing the pill and then having to go to the doctor because the pill I swallowed has side effects. Do you know that the majority of people go to the doctors today not because of the condition, but because of the side effects of the treatment to the condition? This is perverse. It cannot continue.
Well, you've really nailed it here. And, I'm so glad you wrote the book because that book is really about, it's not about giving people more information. I believe it's about helping people to think differently and bring out your own intellect, your own wisdom, your experience, your wisdom, and be able to tap and to see things from a different point of view. And I think you make a good case. If we continue to see things the way we've been seeing them in the past, if we just go down this reductionist point of view, or any other philosophy from my point of view, that you're getting results that don't include what you said, meaning and purpose, understanding, wisdom. If we're not in that space,
then why are we doing it? You know, if we just doing it, you know, it, people come on my show, sometimes they just write a book and they give information. I say, like, do we need more information? I mean, you can just Google information. What we really need now is to change our points of view, change that perspective so we can change our behaviors. And I love what you said, go to the cause. Like, what is the cause, okay? You know, the universe, from my point of view, gives me warning signs. You know, it gives me pain in my body. If I'm doing something wrong, my body's in pain. If I'm eating improperly, all of a sudden I'm starting to bloat. All right, the body is a great tool to give us information, but are we taking that information and really doing something with it? Or are we going outside of ourselves and counting on a machine or a doctor or something outside of ourselves to figure it out for us? I'm not saying you don't need that, maybe a second or third opinion, but ultimately what the professor is saying, I believe, and I'm saying, is that we need to look at cause and effect. And, you know, most of the time, like you said, you know, I love that. You know, most of the time people are getting the effects of something they're putting in their body, and then they go try to find how to cure that effect, and then they get another pill or something, and then it creates more. Why are we doing that? It doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, I got to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back for a wrap-up here. And, gosh, it's been a great discussion. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. And on the screen, by the way, we're putting where you can go to Professor Nadine's website to get a lot more information. Some of his articles are up there. You really want to go there and educate yourself. And also his new book, you can also get on Amazon. Again, if you're inclined, I know I sure am, to get his book, I would definitely check that out over there on Amazon. Professor, we're running out of time here a little bit. Final thoughts. You know, you got a big platform here. What's your message to the world right now?
We live in a time of enormous opportunities. If we want individually, each of us, to not only benefit from them, but also to reflect our sense of belongingness to the world, in our sense of responsibility for the future, we better stop becoming addicted to more machines, to more chemistry, to more of the deterministic thinking. We better start getting out of the cycle in which machines are getting quote unquote smarter, but people are getting more and more stupid. That's a very dangerous path. We better do, each of us, what it takes to avoid this path. That would be my honest answer. I would add to it, this is also a reflection of the fact that people continue to die from disease or in wars or through other conflicts is not a matter that pertains only to those involved. Every person died is dying on my reality, on my present in the world. I cannot be insensitive to the fact that people are suffering. Am I responsible for everybody suffering? I do not take that path, but I'm responsible if I don't do anything in order to prevent that such things should not continue, and especially should not get out of control as they seem to be in our days.
Well, I love that, and I thank you for being here. And you know, the message is we're all connected. We are all one, and what is happening to one of us is happening to all of us. Whether you're aware of that or not, that is what's going on, and it's time to be aware of that. And it's time to be able to make your voice count, make your dollar count, you know, support causes that bring us together instead of separate us. That would be my point of view. Professor, thank you so much for being here. I just really enjoyed our conversation, and I really appreciate you for having the courage to show up here today.
Thank you for putting up with me. I wish you well.
Nothing to put up with. It was brilliant. Thank you so much. And for all of you, I want to thank you for being here and connecting to this show. You know, one of the courageous things you can do today is to pass this show, pass this message on to people that you know, trust, and love, that they can also get this message out into the world. This show is all about you. It's about you being able to step into your power, step into your brilliance, be able to start to go within your own wisdom and be able to make the changes in life that are necessary for you to live happily, and not just you, all of us, to live happy, joyous, and free. Okay. So until next week, continue to see and search for the unseeable and know the unknowable, and then you'll be able to do the impossible.